From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour will be made over the next several weeks when many Americans will receive a check or see money deposited into their accounts by the federal government. The CARES Act provides more than $2 trillion worth of relief for individuals, businesses, and state governments during the pandemic. And that includes one-time direct payments to households, adults who fall into certain income ranges, and children. While many people are going to rely on that money to pay their rent or their mortgage, their utility bills, or buy essentials, the more fortunate are going to see the checks as kind of a bonus. There are people who are still working, haven't seen their jobs cut or their pay cut, and they're going to see the checks. And that leads to a question raised in a recent column by City newspaper editor David Andrietta. What is the ethical thing to do with those funds? This hour we explore a kind of a moral question. And this isn't about judging people for whatever personal finance decisions they make. It's an exploration of values and options. So, yeah, we can debate this. We want to hear from you. But the purpose at the outset is not to say, well, there's one right answer, and if you don't provide it, we're going to laugh at you. Not that, not at all. This is hard. And a lot of people have a lot of different opinions, as David has already found out. He's with us. Nice to have you. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me, Evan.
Also with us is on the line Randy Kern, professor and chair of the Department of Philosophy at the University of Rochester. Professor, how are you?
I'm fine. Great to be here.
And Rosa Terlazzo is with us, associate professor of philosophy at the University of Rochester. Rosa, welcome. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks so much for having me.
So, listeners, if you want to call the program, again, what we're talking about primarily is if your income really hasn't changed, or if your, you know, essentially station in the current life hasn't changed over this pandemic, do you feel strongly about what you should be doing with the money? Or do you feel like it's nobody's business? Get off my back. It's whatever you want to talk about. It's 844-295-TALK, toll free, 844-295-8255. If you're calling from Rochester, it's 263-WXXI, 263-9994. How did this question come to your mind, David?
It came to my mind because, of course, I heard about the coronavirus. Some people call it a stimulus.
It's really relief.
Right, and we can get into that, but yeah. It really is just a relief check. And, you know, I'm thinking about my position, where I am, where my wife works. We both have our jobs where, you know, there are people, of course, who are on hard times, particularly service workers, hourly wage workers. Their businesses have been shut down. We've seen the unemployment filings over the last couple of weeks. They're astronomical. And my wife and I aren't in that position. And we're also in the fortunate position of having a lot of those things that you know, personal finance experts recommend button down. You know, we don't have a lot of debt. Yeah, we have a mortgage. Yeah, we have a car payment, just like most people. But we have several months worth of income and or expenses squirreled away should anything happen. And I got to thinking to myself, like, wow, you know, listen, I don't want to paint myself as some sort of altruist here. I mean, my first instinct was like, this is great. You know, we're in for a windfall. And in our case, we figure it's going to be about $3,400, which is $1,200 for anyone who makes under $75,000 and plus $500 per child. So we have two children and we fit into that category. So we thought, I'm thinking to myself, all right, this is a windfall. And I'm kind of a saver it just in general. And I'm thinking, great, I can just squirrel this thing away. Maybe we'll put it toward a vacation when all this is over. You know, I'm thinking along those lines. And it dawned on me that it just, for me personally, Evan, it just didn't feel quite right. You know, there are a lot of people suffering right now. And again, I don't want to paint myself as self-righteous here. My first instinct was to take the money and run. But I got to thinking about what the purpose of the money is for, what the purpose of the money is. What is our responsibility with it? Particularly if you're in a situation where you don't need the money to tide you over. And it seems to me that that's what that money is for. I was like anyone else, you know, you turn to Mr. Google for advice. And I find, you know, there are countless articles about how to spend your coronavirus stimulus or relief check. And every single one of them quoted personal finance experts. And they all basically said the same thing. And we can talk about that. But it was basically personal finance advice. What I was looking for was advice on what the right thing to do is. What's the just thing? And so I thought, you know, who would have those answers? I turned to an ethicist, Randy Curran at the University of Rochester. He's the chair of the philosophy department there, and he helped me work through this in an email exchange that we had. And you know, we took it from there.
So I'm gonna turn to Randy now. And so Randy, you've got the one answer, right? There's only one right thing to do here, and you know it because of your work. Is that correct?
No, that's not correct. So I have to begin by saying that scholars of ethics do not make moral law for humanity. We struggle to try to think these things through in a principled way. That means trying to figure out what are the relevant moral considerations, the relevant principles. And many of these questions that we struggle with, the large literatures with different analyses identifying different relevant facts, different relevant moral considerations, principles, and they come to different answers. So those of us in departments of philosophy who teach ethics quickly grow accustomed to there being complexity and different views. But I do think that, you know, what we can do is help people think in a more deeply reflective way about the decisions they're making. And in a situation like this, with so much at stake for so many members of our communities, I think the truth is most people want to try to do the right thing. So, yeah, my reaction to Dave's question was to first of all say, you know, don't feel bad that you got the money and that you didn't really need it. I think there are different interpretations of what the bill should have been called, but I do think the decision to make the payments related to income was sensible. Congress had to act fast. It recognized that a lot of people were going to be suffering massive losses of income, so trying to get it to the people who are more likely to spend it, I think, was a very relevant consideration. And so not having money go to top earners mm-hmm. is sensible. They're more likely to already have trouble figuring out how to spend a lot of their money. They're just investing it and whatnot. So I think if you're a lucky person to still be working, to be able to work safely from home, And you're getting this check, and you don't really need it. I mean, my advice is think about the people that make up our community, on whom you depend, and spend your money in ways to try to help hold the community together. They're nonprofits that are doing great work to try to serve the community, that are facing massive drop-offs in their funding, their small businesses. They're all these workers who are on the front lines exposed to more risk than many of us, who are making all the deliveries, who are cooking and handing us our takeout food when we get takeout food. And so a simple thing that one can do is recognize that a lot of people in these service industries, they're carrying a lot of the brunt of the risk mm-hmm. keeping our communities going, and they rely crucially on tips, and they're probably already underpaid. They're certainly underpaid in relationship to the crucial role they're playing and the risk they're facing. So I haven't gotten much cookout, I'll be honest. I've cooked pretty much every night for the last 5 weeks. But I have gotten some takeout, and I think my experience is picking it up. People, since they're not waiting tables, they're not expecting any tip at all. They're surprised when they get one. But I'm just giving them a double what I would normally give in a tip. And They're a little surprised but grateful, and I think that's a very simple thing. You know, there are many people in home service industries that have had many, many cancellations. I had someone coming in helping get squirrels out of my attic recently, and between the two trips, they had to lay someone off, and I was distressed to hear that, frankly, because there had been two of them who arrived for the initial part of the job and only one who came back, and he said, yeah, we're getting a lot of cancellations. And so I didn't think very long about having them come back to finish the job. I could have saved money by not having them come back, but I was particularly glad that I went through and spent the money, when I learned they were getting a lot of cancellations. So I think, I think people can think about who they're depending on. What are the small businesses? You know, what are the great nonprofits that do so much for the community where we can, you know, we having this extra money gives us a chance to try to target our spending to be the needed income of people who are at risk.
So let me ask Professor Terlazzo a way to kind of help break down what might be the kind of moral quandary we can get in here. And then I want to ask Dave what kind of feedback he's gotten on this from all the people, the angry people who said, how dare you ask me what I'm going to do with this, Dave Andreotta. Professor Terlazzo, let's say that on my street, I know some neighbors who are out of work as a result of the pandemic, can't afford to pay their mortgage. Or their rent. I also know that there are nonprofits in Rochester that are really on the edge here, and they are trying to help populations of people who tend to have trouble with housing, who live much more densely clustered, who can't separate as much, who might be more vulnerable. Is the more moral thing to pay the rent or the mortgage for the neighbor who's out of work, or to give the money to the nonprofit helping people in Rochester?
I think that there probably is a right answer to that question.
Really? That's very interesting.
But that requires a serious caveat. I think there probably is a right answer to that question, but I think that it depends on so many contextual factors that question is going to be different for you or for your neighbor, depending on, you know, which organization you're looking at, which neighbor you're talking about, and a million other things. And so one of the things that I really want to encourage people to do when they're making this decision is to try to get away from the idea of figuring out what the most moral thing to do is. There's this term or this phrase in philosophy that gets thrown around sometimes, which is, don't let the perfect be the enemy of the good. And I think that sometimes when we're trying to make sure that we do the very best thing that we possibly can, it paralyzes us a little bit, and we fail to do anything at all. And maybe it's because we just really don't know what to do. Maybe it's because we tell ourselves it's too hard, and so we throw up our hands. I would say, if you're in the position that you are able to make this choice, neither of those choices is the wrong choice to make. There are other ways to think creatively about this too, right? So there are many, many, many thousands of people who are in pretrial detention right now in jails around the United States because they couldn't afford bail. To go home right before their case is heard. And jails are incredibly, incredibly, incredibly good places for spreading viruses, right? So I don't think either of the options you just gave are bad choices. I think they're both great choices. I think it's a great choice to give money to something like the Bail Project to help bail people out now before they become infected and before we have massive rises of cases in that way. I think as long as you're doing something that you've thought through and that you're trying to do something that is good, don't worry about whether it's the most moral thing to do. We're all acting imperfectly here, and a lot of imperfect action trying to do good is going to be so, so much better than all of us really torturing ourselves about whether we figured out the best thing to do.
Tom writes to say, we are both retired and for now in good shape financially. We talked this over last night and agreed that a good portion of our $2,400 will go to our favorite charities so they can continue their good work. Another reader writes to say, to City News, so glad to see this discussion. I've been thinking the same way. We are not destitute for money at this time, and we're wondering how best to use it. Save a little for days ahead for sure, but after that I plan to send out gifts where it can help support community operations that really need a boost, and I hope others do the same. Listeners, if you want to call the program, our email is a little down right now, so if you're trying to email, I'd rather you call 844-295-TALK. It's toll-free, 844-295-8255, 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994, as we talk about the moral thing that you can do with the money from the government that's coming many of our ways very soon. What kind of response have you gotten to your writing on this, Dave?
Well, actually, in terms of the column, which came out last week, most of it's been quite positive, and I've received a lot of feedback from people who simply say, hey, thanks for helping me think through this, or thanks for raising this, because I've been wondering the same thing, and it just, you know, I have the luxury of sitting down and writing these things, and most people are flying by the seat of their pants and doing whatever they're doing, going about their daily life. They don't have time to sort of think about this stuff. So it allowed them a chance to sort of digest it and actually work through it themselves. So it's been mostly positive. But, you know, interestingly enough, you asked earlier how this came about, and I told the story. But there was even more to it. I had posted on Facebook really a even more specific question about to parents of minor children who are in this boat where both parents are still working. We have paychecks for the foreseeable future. And, you know, that the extra $500 is for essentially raising children, right? I mean, children are expensive to raise. It's not just an extra $500 in your pocket. And the question was, you know, what do you plan to do, parents of minor children who get this $500? Would you, this $500 per child, what will you do with it? Is this something you, like, pocket? Do you give the money to the kids? Do you put it in their bank account?
Right.
You
know, college fund, yeah.
Yeah, college fund. And I got a lot of responses. I got, I'm saving it for a Disney vacation for the kids. I'm putting it into a college fund. But again, and listen, everyone, to each his own. And I don't think, like, all of these seem to be responsible decisions that people are, you know, making. To me, the money was supposed to be a tide over. My thinking was that the money is supposed to help people get through this tough time, of which my wife and I and our kids aren't experiencing in the same way that other people are. So what do you do in that case? The comments came in just sort of fast and furious. It was really interesting. That's when it kind of dawned on me, you know, maybe I ought to write a column about this and contact some people who might be in the know. So
do you view this, Dave, then, as after you've had these conversations, you've thought about it, for you, you've come to a conclusion on what your own ethical framework will be for this money?
Sure.
You're less about applying that or judging others? I mean, or do you find yourself going, oh, you're going to save it for a vacation, are you? Selfish. Do you find yourself doing that?
No, I don't, because to be honest with you, like I said from the outset, that's immediately where my head went, or things like that.
I understand.
I think that's human. I think that's natural. And so to each his own. I just know for me, what feels right is, like the professor said, you know, finding people who are in these vulnerable situations and doing something that can help them as well. Listen, I'm not giving it all to a charity. Our idea is spending it on something that we've long wanted to do, but either just didn't have the money for, or chintzed out, or, you know, moved the money to a different purpose. We have a couple of trees in our yard that need to come down. I mean, this is getting to the point where when there's a stiff wind, I move one of the kids whose bedroom is beside near one of the trees. They come into our room when there's a stiff wind. Like, this thing is coming down. And there's going to be a hole in the house, larger than the hole in some people's wallets pretty soon if we don't get this thing fixed. And we've been putting it off and putting it off. And it's something that, like, honestly, we wouldn't be able to do without this money. This for us is the right answer. I mean, yeah, it helps us, but it's also going to go to a local landscaping business that otherwise wouldn't have gotten our business, or even at this point, otherwise might not be working. I think landscapers, as it stands, are not essential workers. I think I could be wrong on that. They're not deemed essential unless it's an emergency, and I think we could probably qualify in this case. I think we
they're also
them.
Very well social distanced for the most part when they're outside doing this work.
Sure. Exactly.
Could I jump in here?
Please. Yeah, please.
Yeah, I was thinking about the parents at home with their kids, who have decided to use the money for vacation. I mean, that strikes me as a quite a rational thing to do.
Yeah.
I mean, this is not an easy time for people who are suddenly at home until further notice with young children. It can be very hard, right, to juggle, to keep, preserve some sense of normalcy for their families. So, I mean, if helping everybody get through it by saying we'll be able to take a vacation, you know, when this is over, that sounds entirely rational to me. I mean, I certainly wouldn't question anybody's decision to do that.
All right. Well, let's see if Professor Terlazzo wants to push back on that. Go ahead, Professor.
Oh, I mean, look, full disclosure, I'm talking to you from inside of a bathroom right now, so that hopefully the noise from my toddler is not going to be too distracting.
We can relate.
I hear that loud and clear. I mean, look, one of the things that I think we don't want to lose sight of here is that we're all making these choices as individuals, right? And there are certain kinds of problems that, you know, you just get better solutions if you have coordinated solutions, coordinated efforts. And, you know, we're in a country that doesn't have a social safety net. You know, one of the things to think about here is that if we had a social safety net in place, we wouldn't have to be thinking about these very urgent problems that a lot of individuals are facing. And so we as individuals wouldn't be in the position of, you know, trying to really go through every decision that we make here with a fine-tooth comb to sort of do the right thing. And, you know, part of not having a social safety net is that there are lots of people who, you know, don't get to go on vacations with their kids, don't get to spend time with their kids. And so I don't begrudge anyone for doing that by any means. But I do also hope that people are thinking not just about what this money will enable them to do, but what the money going to other people will enable other people to do. Mm-hmm. And going forward beyond this, to, you know, think about the fact that, yes, there are lots of people right now who are out of work and in really dire straits through no fault of their own. But that's a thing that happens every single day, right? And so, you know, people get sick, people become disabled, people have to care for a sick parent, people lose their jobs for all sorts of reasons. And so, you know, I hope that people make this choice, do what they can feel good about doing with this money, think about what they do with this money, but also continue to think about this set of issues as we go forward, and think more broadly about, you know, the set of choices we make and how we set things up such that we're not in this position again.
I want to get a couple of listener phone calls in. So let's take our only break of the hour. And right after the break, if you're on the phone, we're coming to you. You just heard Professor Rosa Terlazzo, a professor of philosophy at the University of Rochester. And Randy Kern is the chair of the Department of Philosophy at the university. Dave Andriana is the editor of City Newspaper, who's got us all thinking about ethical, moral choices once the government checks come in, especially for people who have not lost work or income. Your phone calls next. I'm Evan Dawson. Wednesday on The Next Connections. Even during the pandemic, a lot is going on as local groups get ready to celebrate Earth Day. And we're going to talk about those efforts that continue, from electric vehicles to a lot more. Then in our second hour, a conversation with local spiritual leaders. They don't want you to pack churches on Easter, but they do have concerns about the drift we have socially and mentally. And we'll talk about that Wednesday. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson, and let's start working through your many phone calls here. So hang tight. We'll work through a lot here. First of all, Al in calling in New York State. Hi, Al. Go ahead.
Hey, how you doing? Hopefully I won't lose you here. I'm driving. I just want to make a quick comment. I mean, I'm like most Americans, living check by check, and always, I got a lot of debt. But I just wanted to make a comment about everybody that's talking there. Giving the money away, which is nice if you can afford to do that. But I just want everybody to know that this money that politicians are giving us, it's not free money. You don't get to keep this money. Next year, you got to pay that money back, or you got to, it'll come out of your income taxes when you do it. So if you get that money away next year and you're going to get a return, they're going to take that money right out of your, whatever you got coming to you. It's not a gift where you get to keep the money. So actually, you're going to have to pay that money back.
Yeah, Al, I just let me jump in and say I appreciate the call, and I hope you're safe on the road. And he mentioned to our producer, he's a truck driver. To everyone driving a truck, thank you for the work you're doing. We're really, really grateful every day, but especially now. Regards to this, Al, number one, this money is not taxed. And number two, your 2020 tax return and any refund you're due when you file that return in early 2021 will not be affected by the check you're getting now. That's according to many sources, as I understand it, right?
Yeah, that's what I understand, too. It is an advance on a tax credit, but it is, like you said, it is not taxed, and your refund on your 2020 taxes, if you have one coming, will not be affected.
Yeah, so...
And again, that's... I've read that from the New York Times, the Wall Street Journal. Can I say that I've read the 881 pages of the CARE Act? No, I haven't. But from every source I understand who has dissected this, and there's been a lot of ink spilled on it. That's my understanding as well.
There you go.
But there is that thread out there that there is some confusion out there among some segments of the population.
I hope at least for now that clears that up. Let me go down to Ithaca. Heather in Ithaca. Go ahead, Heather.
Hi, Evan. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I work in a maximum security correctional facility with mentally ill inmates, and I've also had type 1 diabetes for over 50 years. So I'm going to use this money as a safety net financially in case something happens to my health. I feel the need to come and serve the people that are the population I chose to work with, because they're freaking out, understandably, with all this going on with the coronavirus and what's going on. But I'm really torn between my mother harping me about I shouldn't be going anywhere, especially in a prison, to I chose to work here with these, you know, with the people, the population, because I want to help people who could use my help as a recreation therapist.
Wow. Heather, that is, I think it's a remarkable decision that you've made to continue doing the work during this time. And I admire that. I applaud it. And I have to think, I'll start with Randy Curran, professor, her idea that having lived with diabetes and doing this work in an exposed population, keeping that money as a fallback in case anything happens, to me, strikes me as entirely logical and allows her to continue making what looks to me to be the kind of really superior moral choice. But what do you think, Professor Curran?
Well, no, I agree completely. I mean, I think the it's amazing and important, immensely important public service you're doing. So, you know, having it as a safety net for yourself makes complete sense. I just want to say something. I mean, I think many of us hearing this kind of story, the word heroic comes to mind. I mean, I think it this is heroic work, and the other point of view is in a pandemic situation like this, most people who are doing dangerous, important work like this don't want to be called heroes. They are just doing their jobs. And so the other term besides heroic that I think is highly relevant, there's just the everyday decency, human decency of carrying on as best as people can with the important work they're doing. It's holding the whole fabric of the society together. So, take my hat off to you.
Yeah, I'd like to jump in there, Evan, if I could, mm-hmm. on Professor Curran's remarks. I actually just wrote a piece today for City about essential workers, quote-unquote essential workers. And, of course, to some extent, we're all essential. We're all necessary to somebody or something. But there are degrees of indispensability. And, for all the talk of the last 3 weeks, at least in New York, of life being upended, not to get off topic here, but take a look at how little of everyday life has been upended. The trash gets picked up. The mail arrives. Our phones work. There's food on the shelves. The street lights go from red to yellow to green. That's a testament to those people who are holding all of us together. And I just think it's remarkable. So my hat's off too, and many, many thanks to people who are doing those jobs.
Yeah, thank you so much to Heather and Ithaca for that phone call. Frankly, inspiring and reminding us how many people are out doing work in the community right now and still showing up. I mean, we all know a lot of nurses, hospital staff, doctors could decide this is too much. I've got a family. I can't risk it. And you are there, and we are standing and cheering, and people like Heather, you too as well. So let me read a couple of emails, because our email's back online and I've got a flood of emails on this. And I'll kick this one to Professor Tolazzo first. Andrew writes to say, Evan, I was happy to hear you mention at the beginning of the program there would be no judging on how people would spend this money. I believe that each person and family has its own situation that needs to be addressed on its own merits. In my case, I'm not 100% sure if I'll actually get a check. I still need to file my income tax. Even if I do get a check, I believe that eventually I will just have to give it back to the government in taxes. This pandemic is going to be too expensive for us not to have to pay it back, either directly or by a general increase in the tax rates. So Andrew is going to hold on to it. Professor Tolazzo, what would you say to that?
I think that probably I tipped my hand before, right? I'm in favor of social safety nets. I'm in favor of problems that can be solved through coordination, that can't be solved through, or can't be solved well through individuals acting alone. I'm somebody who's happy that government takes my money and does good things with it. So, I'm not here to pass judgment on what any individual is doing with their check, but I hope that individuals are not thinking of themselves purely as individuals when they're generally thinking about this pandemic. I'm going to just very briefly jump back to what Heather said before. We're doing this as a community. We have to be doing this as a community. Those of us who get to sit at home and work are doing, the easiest thing in what's hard for everyone. And we're working together so that, the people who are out there doing the on the ground work like Heather, are able to do it at less risk because there are fewer of us out there transmitting the virus. And so I hope that when we make decisions about whether we hang on to this to go back for taxes for the government later, that we're not just thinking about how this affects us individually and our individual pocketbooks.
So little pushback on something Professor Curran said from an email here. Philip writes to say, Evan, I have to say that if saving the money for a vacation is moral, then any use of this money is morally acceptable, and there is little point to having this discussion at all. That's from Philip. Professor Curran, what do you think?
I think that's false. What I said was, if there are families who are experiencing stress in getting through the situation, and it makes it easier for them to get through it by promising their kids a vacation, then I'm not going to criticize that. I mean, there are many different relevant principles in the realm of ethics, and there are people who think that we should always be trying to do the act at any given time that has the absolutely best consequences. That's one view. So maybe that's the objection, that there could be even better consequences for using the money for something other than the vacation. That's one view. There are people who are ardently defend that as the right moral perspective. There are other views that think that there's a range of permissible actions that we can choose within the constraints of morality that we all have to answer to. So the latter is a more morally tolerant view. It's not infinitely tolerant. It doesn't say you can do anything. It still says there are moral considerations that properly constrain the choices we make. So, I mean, from a simple point of view, the government has stepped up to try to do something. It's not the ideal thing it could have done. It could have been vastly more prepared to begin with. It could have had a vastly better national insurance scheme that would have protected people better. It didn't, but it's done something, and it's created a legal entitlement to people getting these funds. It's targeted to try to help the whole fabric of society hold together. So I would point out that there are travel and leisure industries that are taking a terrific beating in what's going on right now. So do you think the jobs of people in those industries matter? They're not going to get the money right now, but it might help them later to have people taking vacations. Taking a vacation, you're still spending the money in ways that generate income to other people. And a lot of those people in service leisure industries are not highly paid, and they're highly vulnerable in this situation. So I think it's false that thinking it's okay to take a vacation opens the floodgates to people doing just anything and everything.
Dave Andretta, yeah. You want to jump in?
Yeah, I just wanted to add that to dovetail on something that Professor Kern said, but also as it pertains to the previous emailer, the one who said that anticipates that the economic fallout of this will be so dire that, you know, it's necessary to save this, or that he feels he's going to give it all back to the government anyway at some point through his taxes. I think that's an understandable and legitimate concern. I mean, you know, just as of a couple of days ago, the idea that New York was going to be shut down was going to stop at April 15th. I don't know that anyone realistically thought that, but you see my point. You know, today it's April 29th. It could very well be May 15th, May 30th, and beyond. I mean, this is going to go on for some time, and nobody has a crystal ball. And so anyone who has concerns about the fallout being even more severe than it's already looking, I think, is a legitimate concern at the very least.
All right, let me read some more here before we get back to the phones. Jillian says, I agree it's a private decision, but I think it's okay to share what you want to do with this, and I've mentioned to several other folks who either have their own income who also feel guilty about taking this that they had not thought of donating, and they were grateful for the input. But this is called a stimulus, so I think spend it. No matter what you do with it, it will help someone. I'm donating 200 of each check that comes and using the rest to complete renovations on my house that I have not been able to afford. This gives income to the person doing that work. All good, I think. That comes from Jillian.
And she looks like she's putting the money toward much the same use that I am, you know, something that will improve my house and in such a way that I wouldn't have been able to afford otherwise. And I'll hopefully decided on a landscaper yet, but at some point I will, and it'll be someone local, obviously. But in terms of the money being a stimulus, I mean, I think that's a little bit of a misnomer. That label has been thrown around quite a bit, but you know, stimulus packages, of course, you know, stimulate the economy. The economy, it doesn't necessarily need a jolt to get moving again.
We don't want people to actually move and
right,
go out and
it
do
can't
things.
Move. I mean, it literally can't move.
The economy's paused.
Yeah, exactly. I suspect that when this is over, and if history is any guide, it will be at some point, and the faucets get turned back on, I don't think we're going to have a difficult time moving the economy again. There will be, of course, shortages in certain industries. Restaurants are particularly hard hit. We may see shortages in those areas, but I think people will be ready to spend at that time.
Let me read a question from a student. Emma says, Professor Terlazzo is one of my favorite professors in the philosophy department, so I had to reach out. I was wondering what everyone – by the way, Emma, this gets you nothing. Whatever you think that this gains you, it's actually unethical to try – anyway. Emma says, I was wondering what everyone's thoughts were in terms of providing assistance to college students, especially since many of them are claimed on their parents' tax returns. I know of many students who require assistance but can't access these resources because they don't know if they have been claimed as a dependent. What's the best way to address this, Professor Terlazzo?
You want to talk to somebody who knows more about the nuts and bolts and the tax of this. I will say that actually I'm delighted that this came up. One of the things that I did yesterday evening in getting ready for this was to also ask some of my Facebook friends what they were going to be doing with their checks. And one of them told me that my previous job was at a land grant school in Kansas where the majority of the students were supporting themselves, working full time, but a lot were in really precarious situations. And she said she's going to take her check and she's going to use it to help students who she knows were not able to make tuition checks in order to be able to register for next semester. Seniors who might not be able to graduate otherwise, she's going to help them pay off some of those tuition checks. In terms of structural support, I want to be able to provide you with that, and I do not know the details. But if other people are looking for good things to do with their money, I think that's a fantastic thing to do.
Now, aren't college students, most of them are still dependents, right?
It depends on what you mean by most of them. At a place like University of Rochester, I believe that's true.
I'm thinking just out loud. I mean, it seems to me that their parents would still claim them as dependents for most college students, but
most traditional age.
Yeah.
Emma, good luck, and thank you for the email. I'll kick this one to Professor Curran. Don writes, I had disposable income before this, and there were vulnerable people before the pandemic. How is choosing what to do with this income any different from what I was doing already? If I do donate this money, does that mean I'm inconsistent for not continuing to donate disposable income in the future? Professor Curran.
That's a great question.
Wow.
And I feel like this was almost reading my mind because I was just thinking about this in the last couple minutes. It isn't any different. I mean, if you've got disposable income, if you've got discretionary income, you're always facing the same question that we're facing now. It's just, I think the what gives rise to the question now is just that people experience getting these checks as a windfall, and some people may have an acute need for it, and others won't have an acute need for it. So it's the same kind of decision that we have to make all the time about discretionary income.
Yeah, Professor Terlazzo, how do you view the way we kind of evaluate how moral, how ethical someone is? Because I think the question from Don takes us even out of the pandemic to ask us if we're quote-unquote doing the right things if we are making good money.
Yeah, I mean, again, I think here that, we have to do the best that we can as individuals. There are, lots of different, really well worked out philosophical positions on this, on what morality requires. I think that I am absolutely compelled by the ones that say that yeah, we are not just individuals with obligations to ourselves and our loved ones, but we are, you know, part of a community, and that we need to be thinking about the needs of others. But again, I really wish that this were not a decision that we were making individually, but that this were, you know, I don't think it should be on the back of individuals to decide, you know, the most difficult moments in other people's lives and whether they have their basic needs. That, you know, I don't think that you're a bad person if you're not giving away all of your discretionary money to make that happen. You know,
Professor, can I jump in and just make sure I understand what you're saying here? It sounds to me like you're actually making a critique of how we structure our society, which is to say, if we rely on individual contributions, philanthropy at big and small levels, inevitably, number one, philanthropy almost never fixes structural problems, and inevitably someone gets lost. And so pinning this on every individual, asking how much individual discretionary income you have and why didn't you give it to a charity, instead of asking why are we structuring our society this way where people are hurting all the time. Is that fair?
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's right. I think that's right. And, you know, you make imperfect decisions in your own individual context because, you know, that's what we have to do as individuals living our lives. But one of the things that we also make decisions about is what kind of society we're going to push for. And, you know, this is a massive rupture for us. COVID-19 is a huge, huge rupture for us in this country and in the world. And so I hope that we're all really thinking about how we want to structure our society going forward and you know, making moves to do that together in a way that we can get behind.
You know, on that note, Evan, my wife and I, as you know, we're both from Canada, and there's a much larger social safety net there. And we were talking about this $500 that we get for each of our children. My sister, who lives in Canada in Ontario, and my wife's siblings as well, who all have children, they get monthly so-called, I don't know the formal term for it, but it's known in Ontario as the baby bonus. And when you have a baby, you get $100 a month until they're, you know, 18, I think it is. So they've already gotten far more from their government than we're going to get in this stimulus. This $500 is like a pittance compared to what they've received for their 12 and 13-year-old children over the years. But it's interesting to know.
Don't tell people this. People are going to move to Canada to have a family.
Right.
Let me squeeze in one more phone call, keeping it tight here. This is Bonnie. Hi, Bonnie. Go ahead.
Yeah. Well, I was going to say something about the, you know, people have to, you know, look at their own situations, but you could share it. You could give part to somebody for an activity or something they needed, and then do your thing. And I would focus on housing because the housing situation in this country has been a disgrace for years. It continues to got a little bit better, but still a disgrace. And then have people become activists in the groups that are trying to do this. And because that's where some of the changes can come in, not just giving money. I also wonder if we weren't talking about a terrible virus situation, if what people would say about, you know, we have all these problems and they're being disclosed as we go through this. And yet for people like myself and others, we've known about these for years and years and years, the housing problems, the poverty problem. So we need to ask ourselves the question, are we willing to really deal with those honestly and collectively, or are we going to go back to, well, now we're beyond the health problem, so we can just keep on doing what we've been doing.
Yeah, and I think, thank you, Bonnie. I think that goes to what Professor Terlazzo is saying, but how do you as an individual try to enact that kind of change that has to come from beyond the individual level, Professor?
Yeah, I mean, this is something that I struggle with all the time. And I think that, you know, getting involved at the local level really is where your voice has the most weight. You know, I think absolutely, you know, call your senators, call, you know, your congresspeople. But get involved in local politics, get involved in local organizations that are doing things on the ground, because they're, your voice, you know, isn't just one among many that, you know, probably aren't listening to each other and are canceling each other out a lot. You know, at the local level, you can you can make changes, and those things add up. So, you know, yeah, I encourage anyone to think about what causes they really care about, and, you know, run for office maybe, or if you can't run for office, find an organization that's working on that and do what you can.
You know, Dave Andrietta, you're the reason we had this conversation this hour, and listening to Randy and Rosa, it occurs to me, I'm so glad I didn't major in philosophy. I think I would lie in bed every night just questioning every decision I've ever made, you know, and just turn myself into a paralyzed pretzel.
I was thinking about this actually, hearing them speak on a couple of occasions, that it was taking me back to my philosophy courses in college, and it, you know, it's the reason I got B minuses. You know, I just can't keep up, frankly. I can't.
And then you turn to journalism.
Yeah, of course.
Goodness gracious. Thank you, Dave Andrietta, for this and for the thought-provoking work in City Newspaper. I know you saw readers, by the way, on your own site jumping in saying, maybe we should kick all the money to City and the organizations that need it in a hard time. I think that would be a moral choice. We need great journalism. Thanks for what you're doing, and thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me, and I'd like to also thank Professor Curran for lending his insight and voice to that column.
Yeah, Professor sure. Curran, thanks for taking the time, and thanks for making us all question every decision we've ever made. We appreciate it.
It's my pleasure.
And Professor Terlazzo, much appreciation to you as well. Thanks for hanging in there and spending the hour with us.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, again, a shout-out to the journalists. I'm so deeply grateful that y'all are doing what you do.
Yep. Thanks for your show.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. And we're going to be here. We're proud to be here. And I think these conversations are so interesting and they're so important. And I will reiterate, no judgment, but I think we should have these conversations. And I'm so glad Dave led us to this one here. Our thanks to Emma Ray Stein, the intern, and Megan Mack, producer, Rob Braden, the engineer. I'm Evan Dawson. Have a nice afternoon. We'll talk to you tomorrow on member-supported public radio.